Thanks for tuning in to today's Horsewoman Podcast. Our show explores women in the horse industry as they share their dreams, challenges, successes. What drives these women? Well, let's find out. Hi, this is Rose Cushing, host of today's Horsewoman Podcast. Really excited today that I have Leisha Wellborn Griffith as our guest. Leisha has had a great career in the horse industry and has tons of experience and things that she can share with us, so we're happy to have her on the show. So welcome in, Leisha.
Good morning, Rose. How are you?
I'm doing good today. I've been excited about talking to you, and we've been trying to get this worked up for a while, so I think that you have so much to offer to our industry. So tell us a little bit about you.
Okay, sounds good. We're happy to be here this morning. Yes, I'm glad we got it worked out as well. I know we both kind of have busy schedules, so that's great that we could get it together. So my husband and I run Brock Griffith Horsemanship, which is his name. We primarily start colts under saddle and work with problem horses and work with performance horses like rodeo horses.
And you guys have been rodeo stars and colt champions, so tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we've done a little bit of everything. We've certainly competed in our fair share of colt starting challenges, which we've enjoyed, you know, the typical format where you've got a couple colt starters and a couple of fresh horses, and we've had some success in that. I won the all-women's colt starting challenge, and then we won a couples challenge where we did it together, and Brock's won several on his own, so those have been a lot of fun. We grew up rodeoing, and our kids rodeo, so we all still compete in ranch rodeos, team rodeos, and barrel racing, the kids do pole bin and goat tie and breakaway rip and all that fun stuff. So that's kind of our weekend time to spend with our kids, and then we've got some students that go along as well, so those are always good.
Now, you've been barrel racing a long time, so tell us a little bit about your experience with barrel racing. You know, what makes a good barrel racer?
So I have been for a long time. I think really applying good horsemanship, you know, kind of sets you aside and makes you really good at it. I prefer to see a young girl, you know, learn how to ride and learn how to use horsemanship versus learning how to use tools on their horses. I think that, you know, that makes them really good at it and sets them aside from everybody else. You've got two kinds of barrel racing. You've got your barrel racing shows where it's just barrel racing, and then you've got your rodeos where they add the barrels in. And it's a lot of fun to bring along young horses. You know, you've got your girls that want to have your winning horses, and then you've got girls like me that bring along young horses and take them out and get their first couple years of experience under their belt. So that can be quite challenging. Young horses, you know, they do what young horses do. And some days they make you look really good, and some days they really try to embarrass you. But it's part of training horses, and no horse ever gets great without somebody taking it initially and exposing it and hauling it and getting it used to everything.
Right. And what do you look for in a barrel horse?
So, in a barrel horse for me, a lot of girls want a run horse. They want a horse with a lot of run, you know, more like a track-type quarter horse. I typically like a horse that's crossed on a run and a cow horse. That way, to me, they've got a little bit more work to them. And they may not be, like, super lightning fast, but they turn well. I feel like they get down in the dirt and they listen well. And I just really enjoy the cow crosses or the working crosses in the performance horses.
I would think, I've never barrel raced, but I would think that would be really important because, you know, if he's fast and he doesn't listen, you're not going to win because you're going to knock barrels over.
Right, and I mean, a lot of times you'll see these, like, runaway-type horses, and they put so much headgear on to control them, which I totally understand. If you've got something that's out of control and you want to control it, you know, the trainer's looking for a solution to that.
Right.
They're looking, you know, for these real fast-type horses, but I really do enjoy the cow crosses on them or the working crosses on these type of horses. They just, to me, it just suits me. I like the smaller, shorter, drag-your-foot-through-the-dirt, those type horses versus the big, huge, running horses.
Right. Right. Now, you also do roping, so tell us a little about that.
Yes, ma'am. We rope a little bit. We team rope. We head, heel, and breakaway. And we also do some ranch roping at the ranch rodeos, which are really fun, and it's kind of non-traditional where you're doctoring cattle and things like that. so those are a lot of fun. But I definitely enjoy, roping on the hillside. I definitely enjoy breakaway roping. Those are both a lot of fun. I also enjoy teaching young horses to do those things. So we'll start them here at the house on the sled and rope the sled some on them, and then we've got a roping pen that we're members of that we'll haul the young horses to and expose them there. So I definitely enjoy that. And I enjoy going and roping on like a Sunday afternoon and round robin where you've got 10 people and you rope 10 times with 10 different people. Those are always fun. So I've never really made it real serious or tried to be, the best in the world at roping. But I do enjoy it. It is a good skill set to have, I feel like, for cowgirls to have. And it's a lot of fun.
Do you rope on your barrel horse?
So our horses, and not everybody does this. Some people have their rope horses and they have their barrel horses or whatever. Ours, I pretty much require to do any job, whether it be, doing a public demonstration or having kids come over from a group to ride them, to rope them, to run the barrels. Yes, ma'am, I do want them to do every event.
I think that makes for a better horse, and it gives him a break a little bit so he can do other stuff too.
It does. In particular, our daughter's horse, Willow's horse, he really, really likes, we do the women's triathlon at the ranch rodeo where you, all in one run, you break away a calf, you run a set of barrels, and at the end of the barrels, you step down and tie a goat. So you're doing three events at one time, and you want to do it ideally in about 35 seconds or less. And her horse just really, really does well at that event. He really likes the challenge, I think, of all three. And I think it does make a well-rounded, all-around horse to ask them to do more than one job.
I think so, too. So of the two things that you do, roping and barrel racing, which one's your passion?
I'd probably say, I don't know, that's a tough one. So I go through my spurts. I've ran barrels for a long time, and I go through my spurts where I really like it, and I'll go, and I enjoy it, and then I'll get bored with it. I'll take time off from it, and then I'll go back to roping. So I flip-flop back and forth. If I had to pick, I'd probably enjoy the roping aspect more than running barrels.
All right.
A little bit more challenging.
Yeah, for sure, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I tried to learn to rope one time and decided, and we did it actually live on my TV show, and it didn't take but a few seconds to figure out I probably wasn't roping material without a lot of years of practice.
It's definitely something you either grow up doing or you invest a lot of time in learning how to do, because there's, just the roping aspect of roping the dummy on the ground is one thing, and then you add in the horse and add in the live cattle, and it can go kind of any direction.
Absolutely, absolutely. So you've accomplished a lot of things in your life. What are you the most proud of?
Honestly, I'm probably the most proud of having a good marriage and have raised good kids. And that doesn't have a lot to do with the horse industry, but it does. We have, my husband and I, we created this business 25 years ago together. We're still running it strong. We still keep a waiting list for training horses, thank goodness. We've been very, very blessed in doing a good job on each horse. And in raising good kids, I'm proud of that. I'm proud of a lot of the horses that we've made. I see a lot of horses that have been to us, whether it be, to start them or to work on problems, and I see them performing and see them winning and see them doing well. I'm super proud of that, and I'm definitely proud of winning the colt startings that we've won. We've competed with some really good trainers, not only in North Carolina, but just in the Southeast in general. There are some really, really good colt starters that are good at what they do.
Right.
And to hold a candle to any of those, men or women, has been super special to me, just to compete with them in the same arena, much less to win anything. To come from just a commercial-type farm growing up with horses and, for the rest of your life for you to be a good horseman, I'm super proud of my horsemanship. I'm proud of what I've learned and what I continue to learn. I feel like every day I learn something new working with horses, and each one you're going to learn something with. And just when you think you know it all, there's so much more to learn. But I'm definitely proud of the life that we've built. It's just such a cool thing to not only run a business, but to run it with your family.
I agree. And, having horses in general, if your partner isn't on board, it's a rocky road.
It is. I've seen a lot of marriages fail, honestly. A lot of my friends, a lot of marriages fail because, you know, the wife was really into horses or vice versa, or the husband was and the other partner wasn't. And it's not a hobby like golf. It's not something you pick up and do once a week. Unfortunately, it's 365 days a year.
It is.
I have to miss a lot of things. I've missed a lot of events and a lot of things I wanted to go to because I had to feed my horses. And it's not just my horses, it's the training horses and the boarding horses, and they definitely come before an event. So if there's a wedding at 5 o'clock, not a great chance I'm going to make it, you know?
Yeah.
So it definitely is a lifestyle, and I feel like, you know, your partner has to be on board, and they have to be okay with you doing it every single day, or it's probably not going to work out for somebody.
Absolutely. You know, I feel like it's just like any other career, you know, when you're driven and you have a career, whether you're a corporate executive or a horse trainer, you have to put in that, you know, how many ever hours a week it takes kind of work.
Right, right. And, I mean, I chose a long time ago that I didn't want to work 40 hours for somebody else. So here I am 25 years later still working 100, 120-hour weeks for myself.
You sound like me.
But I do still believe, you know, if you do what you love, you're not working.
You sound like me. I've turned my nose up at many good-paying jobs because I didn't want to work on Saturday and Sunday. And being self-employed, I'm never off on Saturday and Sunday.
No, absolutely not. I'm doing something every weekend, whether we're showing or competing or I'm hauling horses. You know, the hauling is a big part of our business, too. And I'm like, just this weekend, I took the entire weekend to haul a load of horses. So I never mind working on the weekends. It doesn't bother me one bit.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your hauling business, because that's a fairly new part of your horsemanship business and very important part, and you've built a great reputation.
It is. So it initially started with, you know, a horse, or let's just say a client would have a single horse they wanted to bring to training, and they didn't have a way to get there. So I would, you know, offer for whatever fee to go and pick the horse up and get it into training. I'd also get some calls occasionally at night from my vet that, you know, they had a client with a horse, same situation, that was colicking. They don't have a trailer. They needed it to get to the vet school. So we eventually just decided just to make it a business, and it's definitely full-time. I've been averaging about 140 to 150,000 miles a year for the last several years, and that could be anything, like I said, from a vet appointment to an emergency to, you know, maybe you're in North Carolina and you bought a horse that was in Idaho and you don't want to go and pick it up.
Right.
So I've moved thousands of horses at this point, and I do enjoy that as well. I feel like if you can hire a horseman to move your job with good equipment versus just a guy with a truck and a trailer, your horse is going to be a lot better off going down the road. That horseman is going to take care of that horse. The horseman is going to, you know, feed, hay, water, keep the trailer clean. They're going to look for any signs of stress. They're going to keep the clients updated the entire time. And I feel like that's a big deal when you spend money on shipping. Gosh, I just saw where one went missing the other day with a big commercial shipper. It took them 36 hours to locate it, and when they did locate it 36 hours later, it was only 4 hours from where it had been picked up.
I read that. That's horrible.
It is horrible. I can't imagine having a horse, number one, going with somebody else. I mean, that's just stressful enough as it is on the interstate with the way people drive these days.
Yes.
But then not being able to locate it and the shipper not answering the phone, that's, you know, that's pretty stressful for the client.
Absolutely.
So I just tell people to, you know, to research your shippers just because they say they're commercially licensed and they have a DOT does not make them great at it. But however, there are a lot of really great ones.
I agree. And, you know, horses are very stoic. So if
yes.
you're not a horse person, you're not going to see those little subtle innuendos that tells you that there's a problem coming.
Right, that something's wrong, that they're stressed, that they're trying to colic, that they are trying to take on a respiratory infection, that they,
yeah.
you know, gosh, so many things can go wrong. You know how horses are. They spend them days trying to kill themselves, I feel like.
Yeah.
but it is important, I think, to have a good eye and have somebody that really is going to stop every 2.5 to 3 hours and check on those horses. And like I said, keep hay and water in front of them and keep the client updated. And I want them to, beyond shadow of a doubt, know from the time they get in the trailer to the time they get off, where they are, what's going on, what the horse looks like, and just try to ease their minds a little bit during that shipping period.
Absolutely. And, you know, not only shipping, but loading him and unloading him. I mean, you know,
if
a person's trying to load a horse that doesn't know how to load that horse, and they're not a horseman, they're going to force it on. It's going to be a bad experience. And then you're going to have a real problem that you didn't even see coming.
Yeah, it definitely can be. I mean, I had a client just last week. They had sold their property there, local in Cary, and they were moving over to the other side of Raleigh. And it was their horse, and they had been trying for 24 hours to load her, and they had loaded her several times into their little two-horse trailer, and she kept flipping over inside of it and tearing it up, and they couldn't get the doors closed. And long story short, they closed at 2 o'clock that day, and they had to go. They called me at 11 o'clock that morning, 3 hours before they had to be off the property, and I happened to be home. I had just gotten home from a long trip, and I was able to go down and help them move that horse, and I felt like that right there just really changed their day, because the whole family was stressed. The dad was all beat up where the horse had flipped over and they're in the trailer with him, and it was just a bad situation. So I definitely run into a lot that won't load or that have difficulty loading, and that loading is definitely one of our specialties. It's something I used to do long before we, you know, started the shipping business, is teaching horses how to load, and teaching clients how to load their horses. So a lot of times just the horse doesn't have the forward momentum, they want to pull back on pressure. And we'll just work on getting those horses to go forward and learn how to get into the trailer and get in quietly and stand and wait, you know, for everything to be closed up. There's nothing worse than loading a horse in the trailer and, you know, they've got these ramp-type loads and they're trying to close that ramp while the horse is trying to back out. So it can be super dangerous, you know, for the client and for the horse. I've definitely gotten into dangerous situations myself. I won't say that I haven't. I had almost all of my top teeth knocked out at the start of COVID from a horse that flew backwards out of the trailer and nobody told me. So it's definitely something, you know, you want a horseman versus somebody you hired off of U-Ship.
yes.
It definitely can be helpful.
Hey, y'all. This is Lonnie from Mule City Specialty Feeds located in Benson, North Carolina. It's almost springtime. Is your horse blooming? Does your horse have a shiny coat and healthy hooves? How much extra time and money are you spending mixing supplements in the feed room when you could be enjoying your horse in the arena or out on the trail? Then look no further. Mule City Specialty Feeds has a line of equine feeds that delivers maximum nutrition. From your performance horse to your weekend trail horse, our line of maximum nutrition equine feeds offers 5 different complete balanced formulas that will take you out of the feed room and into the saddle. In addition to equine feeds, we also offer complete feeds for your barnyard pets and livestock. For more details, visit our website at mulecity.com, follow us on Facebook, or give us a call at 1-800-587-9229. And don't forget, Mule City delivers.
Now tell me a little bit about your training business too, because you guys can a lot of horses to be trained and train the riders as well?
Yes, ma'am, we do. We definitely want to train the riders as well. So for about 25 years, we've been taking in colts to start. We take in horses that have problems. We take in just tune-ups. You know, they want their horse advanced, or maybe the owner wants to advance. And also performance horses, again, we're happy to start them on the barrels, haul them to some barrel races. Same thing with the roping. We take in a lot of warm bloods that have developed problems, like in the jumping world. Horses that all of a sudden refuse to jump or whatever. They've been vetted. Everything is fine, but for whatever reason, they don't want to do their job anymore. So we'll take those type horses, those jumpers, and just change their job for a little bit, maybe introduce them to some cattle work or something like that. We definitely want to work really close with the owner. I tell every one of them when the horse goes home, we still have a relationship, please call us. But, you know, that's the most important part. I feel like money is really hard to come by these days.
Uh-huh.
And when you invest in your horse, you need to invest in yourself. So, you know, we can train the horse to do whatever, to lay down, to do whatever they want it to do. But if we don't train the owner, I mean, it's like putting you in a 5-speed car and you've never driven a 5-speed. So if you have to figure it out on your own, it can be a little bumpy, but with some good instruction, you know, it makes things a lot easier. And like I said, we've been blessed for a really long time to stay busy and to, you know, to be able to raise our kids and pay our bills and do something that we love. And in helping, I guess, thousands of horses at this point, it's been a lot of them.
That's
so
true.
But we enjoy it. We're slowing down a little bit. We don't take on quite as many per month, you know, as we used to.
Mm-hmm.
we're getting older. We're in our 40s. We've both been hurt. We're a lot more cautious than we were when we were 20.
Right.
But we do still take in a lot of horses to start and a lot of problem horses. And we definitely, we love it.
Now, do you help clients find the horse that fits them?
So we do that. You know, they can call and they can say, hey, I'm looking for this. This is my budget. And I'm happy to reach out to, you know, just our group of friends or group of horse people that we have that look for that. Sometimes they come with the wrong horse, and that can be really hard to tell somebody. But for me, you know, if I've got a client that's, let's say she's 65, and she brings me a 3-year-old Friesian cross, I may be pretty quick to tell her that this is probably not a great situation. And honesty can be tough.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you tell somebody something they don't want to hear, they can take it one of two ways. They can take it as in you're looking out for their life, which is what I'm doing, or they can take offense to it. And you're going to have both, certainly. And you're going to hurt some feelings at some point in being an honest horseman. So, you know, that makes it difficult because you've got a lot of people in the horse industry that are not honest, that are happy to, you know, drug a horse, hide something, whatever, sell it and send it down the road, and they don't care who rides it or what happens. I definitely do care, and I definitely will be honest with you. So that can be hard, but I most certainly don't mind helping somebody find something in their budget that suits them, mainly that they can enjoy. You know, I feel like a lot of people have horses that they can't enjoy for whatever the reason. Maybe the horse likes training. Maybe the client likes the training to ride that horse. Sometimes the horse can be overtrained for that client.
Right.
But a lot of times it can just be the wrong situation. So we're happy to help get them in the right situation because the whole point in having a horse is to enjoy it, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
And it, you know, it took me a long time to learn. When you go to buy a horse, don't say, oh, I'm going to go find me a buckskin or a blue roan. Because chances are you're not. Chances are.
We definitely advise not to shop on color. If you happen to get what you want, that's great.
That's right. Chances are I'm going to wind up with a red one, which is my least favorite color. But I'll tell
you
something.
That's right, a good old sorrel horse.
But when you get that old sorrel horse that does anything you want it to do and will never hurt you, then it'll become very beautiful to you.
That's it. I definitely advise people to try to find something they, like I said, they can get along with and they can have fun with, they can trust. I mean, they are horses. Things can go wrong at any time on even the best one, always. But I feel like there really are some saint of a horses out there that just, they're worth their weight in gold. And that's like the truest statement ever. You know?
Absolutely. And you know, also, when people are shopping for a horse, I think it's important to realize if you're a serious horse person, this may not be the horse you have forever, because as you get better, you may outgrow this horse.
That is absolutely true. We do see people go through, you know, they kind of go through the levels. You've got some that just stay at, like, they just want the trail ride, and that's all they ever want to do, and that's perfectly fine. I mean, there are horses that are happy to take these folks out trail riding on the weekends and go camping. That's another great thing to do with, you know, your performance horses there as far as giving them a different job.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you've got your folks that want to, they want to up their horsemanship and they want to get better. Or even, let's say they start running barrels and they're at the very bottom and they're not really clocking, they're just kind of getting comfortable with it, and then they start to get better. Well, they max that horse out, and let's just say that horse is only going to run in what we call the fourth division, and that's as fast as he's ever going to get. But the client is ready to go on and go faster. There's certainly nothing wrong with selling that horse to a good home and getting me something that, To step up the steps, let's say.
Absolutely. So you've accomplished so much, Leisha. What's left on your bucket list to do?
Oh, gosh. Well, I don't know what's really left on the bucket list. There are a few things that I would like to do that if I was called to do, I definitely would. I've always been a big fan of Road to the Horse. And, you know, they just kind of started bringing women into that recently.
Yeah.
Road of the Horse is obviously the biggest colt starting competition in the world, and I think that any colt starter would love to do that if they were called to do so. Also, just as a spectator, I would like to go and get out to the NFR, to the National Finals Rodeo in Las Vegas. It's not something that I've been to. I am not a big fan of airplanes.
Yeah.
So I feel like that does kind of hold me back from doing some things that I've wanted to do. I think, you know, I'll just kind of keep competing. I'm not near as serious as I was in my 20s about competing in things. I definitely still have a competitive side. The older I get, kind of the less I do, Rose, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I understand. I'm 66, trust me.
Yeah, I would. I would love to get out and watch the NFR. I would love to even maybe just go to the Road to the Horse one day, but if they ever call me to go, I would definitely go and compete in that. I don't know how many cold starting days I've got left in me at 41, almost 42. We'll continue to start some for our business. Like I said, we don't take in as many as we used to, but we do still take in a select group. We keep a waiting list for that, just kind of work through it as we can. But, you know, honestly, just to continue my horsemanship journey and just continue to learn more, I feel like, you know, even at my age, even when I've been doing this for a long time, I've still got a lot to learn. I feel like the opportunity is always there to learn from other trainers, learning what to do, learning what not to do, and things like that. So,
well, you know, you're an excellent colt starting judge and an excellent commentator, too, so you'd have a big future in both of those fields.
Yes, ma'am. I've enjoyed those. I know that I've commentated, emceed some of your competitions, and
yeah. And
I've judged a few, and I really enjoy that. I just enjoy everything that goes into the art of colt starting. It's such a special dance, and not everybody has it, but a lot of people do have it. And, you know, setting those colts up from the first ride through the first 60 days, you're really setting them up for his life. And I feel like colt starting is a big different venue than training.
Yes.
I feel like there's a big difference in the two. And it's just something that I've really enjoyed. I enjoy the training aspect. I enjoy teaching horses to side pass or to two-track or to do fancy things, come pick you up off the fence or to lay down or all that stuff. The competition, I enjoy, you know, training horses for that. But something about being the first person to touch it. You know, when they haven't been handled, when they haven't had anything done, you're the first person to interact with it. You're really setting him up right there for how the rest of his life is going to go. And you can make it, you know, just so good for that horse if you teach him, you know, wrong from right from the get-go. And you have a good, gentle way about taking him through that colt starting process.
Absolutely. And whoever gets him needs to understand that he knows right from wrong. And you just have to continue carrying on with that.
Yeah, you definitely got to keep up with the training, especially those ones that, you know, they come in here and they get 60 days, which is not very much. A lot of people think, oh, you know, 60 days is a lot. And it really does set him up, but somebody's got to continue it and not fail him once he goes home.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of advice would you give women coming into our industry? Because it's a tough place to make a living.
It is. So my number one thing would be, if you're going to do it, you're going to have to be tough. It's a lot harder for the women than it is for the men. And that's just the way it is. Anytime a woman comes into, you know, a male-dominated type environment, I feel like there's always been that thought of, you know, cowboy and it's for cowboys. And so it rings true in some things. There are definitely things that men can do that I physically cannot do. That's just all there is to it. I've never been one of those women that say, I can do anything a man can do, because I can't.
Right.
I'm 5'4 and 120 pounds. So a lot of those things I can't do. But for the women coming in, you're going to have to be tough, and you're going to have to commit to it, and you're going to have to really love it. If you come into it half-hearted, you're not going to make it. If you come into it and you're going to cry every time you get your toes stepped on, you're not going to make it, because you're going to have some injuries. You're going to have, you know, maybe a backup plan for when you are injured. My husband and I both had major injuries where we were out of work for extensive periods of time. I was out of work one time for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Had it not been for my husband, you know, keeping our business going, I would have lost everything that I had.
Right.
So you're going to have to be tough, but I just mainly advise them to be tough at it and to come into it with an open mind and to learn as much as you can learn from anybody that has a little bit more experience than you do. I feel like I see a lot of young people and they already know it all.
Yeah.
And I feel like that right there is where they really need to take the opportunity to learn from anybody and everybody. Ask people questions. You can go to anybody. I sat with John Lyons outside at Expo one time when I was very young and first starting doing public demonstrations, and he schooled me for 30 minutes, and you better believe I listened to everything that man had to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I spent a lot of time with, like, Guy McLean. I've taken a lot of advice from him. I've spent a lot of time with other trainers that I have a lot of respect for and that I've tried to learn from. So I feel like just go around and learn all that you can from every trainer, every opportunity that you have. But women can certainly make it in the horse industry, and a lot of women do better than men. They've got a special touch. They've got that soft side. They've got something to them that these horses really take to. And women are athletic, and women can ride.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, like, these girls that are running at the NFR or these girls that do, like, eventing. Eventing blows my mind. Show jumping. those women that, you know, that compete in the eventing and show jumping, that's something to be said for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything else that you want to leave our listeners with?
You know, the best piece of advice I've ever given out, I think, and that I stick with, is the kindest thing you can do for any horse is to get him some training. The reason that I say that is because, number one, the horse may not always be with you. And if you love that horse at some point in your life, whether you love him for 6 months or you love him for 10 years, and then the situation changes for whatever reason, if he's had some training, he's likely to find a soft landing. If he's disrespectful, if he's not had much training, he's more than likely to not find a soft landing. So I always advise horse people, the kindest thing you can do for any horse is get the horse some training, teach him to be a good citizen, and that horse is most likely going to have a great life.
I agree with you 100%. Now, how can people reach you guys? How can they find you?
So they can find us. We have a website, BrockGriffithHorsemanship.com. We have social media. Obviously, we have Facebook pages. Our phone number, anybody's welcome to call us. That's on our website and on our social media as well. We're located, our facility is in Graham, North Carolina. I obviously travel all over for my husband and I both, Brock and I both, for clinics, for lessons. We travel around for expos. I travel around a lot of hauling horses, but our facility is in Graham, and we do most of our training here. We do some farm calls where, you know, we need to go out and help somebody with something at their farm, or let's say, you know, they want the trailer in for lessons, but their horse won't load, so we do have to go out and help them. Yeah, they can look us up on our website at BrockGriffithHorsemanship.com. We've both got Facebook and social media and different outlets there, and we're happy to help, whether it's just talking to somebody on the phone, or, you know, giving them a couple lessons, taking their horse in for training, whatever. Happy to help out anybody that is seeking some help in the horse industry.
Very good. Well, I really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for being on the show.
Yes, ma'am, Rose. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
And as always, guys, thank you for listening.
I hope you enjoyed today's show. Our souls wander in similar places. Even though we may not know each other, we touch the same wind, we walk under the same sky, and our hearts wander in the same dreams. We are one, women just like you and me. Thank you for listening.